Welcome to the 2013 Post-NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Ted Sobel, along with Ron Marmolevsky. You may not know who he is, and I don't blame you. The only reason I know who he is because I went to high school with him 100 years ago. But Ron, tell people your background and what and how you know so much about the draft.
You're right, Ted. Not too many people know about me. I'm just kind of the non-TV, non-radio guy who's occasionally interacted with some of these folks, but I had a day job, but my passion was for the NFL football. Believe it or not, longer than Mel Kiper has done this, I grew up with the Joel Bushbaums of the world, loved his analysis in the sporting news, and this is the 35th year that I've analyzed the NFL draft. I do pre-draft reports. I write up player evaluations on over 400 players now. It didn't used to be that many, but now it's over 400 evaluations. And more importantly, my work starts now, what we're talking about now. It's after the draft when I talk about person-team fits and how the team has positioned itself for the next season and what needs still are out there.
And I thought I had no life. How do you find the time, even though you're retired now, to actually, I mean, there is so much involved here, so many schools. How do you do it?
I just love watching football. I don't spend any time really talking about or even watching some of the other sports. And I bypass completely reality TV. So sorry about that, folks. I couldn't tell you whether it's Survivor Season 4 or 44, but I could tell you a little bit about Tom Brady in the 1999 draft.
It's always Survivor mode around the NFL draft, isn't it? Let's get on to the analysis. It was a fascinating draft, and I think everybody's still thinking that second round was more exciting than the first. What do you think?
First round kind of went as expected, but there wasn't any glamour. There wasn't any glitz to it as far as quarterbacks, running backs, even wide receivers slipped. We're talking about in the first 26 picks, one player from quarterback, running back, and wide receiver selected. Heavy on offensive linemen, then a little bit heavy on defensive linemen and pass rushers. Not a glitzy draft. About 6 to 12 legit first-round draft picks and about 40 second-round draft picks.
I always like the need versus value argument. So where do you see that fit for this year's draft?
It really depends on the philosophy of the team and what the team has right now. If you're a team of many needs, New York Jets, Oakland Raiders, just draft the best available player because he's going to start for you. If you're a team like the Baltimore Ravens, master plan in place for a dozen years, then you're drafting best player available approach as well, and the New York Giants. If you're a team with very few holes, like the New England Patriots and the Green Bay Packers, just get what you need. And don't worry about the value because you're that close. The timing is now. Now, whether or not those teams were true to that and drafted the best player, that's under debate. But that's really the philosophy that teams need to go in, depending on where they are as a team and an organization.
And I think that Bill Belichick is a perfect example. In the past, he's actually drafted value over need a lot, even though he didn't have to. And that's where I think we've questioned him many years over that, right?
I've questioned his drafts at the top and at the bottom, but not in the middle. In the middle is where he stockpiles his picks. We saw it again this year, trading from 29 to get a stockpile of picks in the middle of the draft used for rated players. Unfortunately, what he did is, once again, he missed on his Clay Matthews. He missed on those players that jump right off the radar because they're not going to be available at 52 when he drafted. And then he takes a lot of reaches at the end of the draft. But in the middle, he does a good job.
Are you surprised, though, that there were just so much of a lack of running backs and quarterbacks taken in the first few rounds?
In the end, no. We got a lot of hype and a lot of fake hype, I would say, right, on what's going on with the quarterbacks. Buffalo worked out 9 quarterbacks and were sending smoke signals on 8 of them, but not on Manuel. So you see where they were going.
Well, which actually is brilliant if that's who they wanted, right?
Yeah, and that way they could trade down And they're still worried about, well, maybe somebody, we got to take Geno Smith ahead of him. We've got to take Ryan Nassib. But their target all along was Manuel, who wasn't slated to come off until maybe the end of the first round, maybe in a trade up. Now, as for running back, not at all surprised. This year's class of running backs, the slowest I've ever seen.
Really? But how much does that come into play depending on what you want, too? I mean, if you got a good fullback or whatever that is available, and that's your need. Now, were they out there?
For Green Bay, you draft them anyway because right. You've de-emphasized that position for too many years. For Pittsburgh, you draft them anyway because that's your makeup. That's your blue-collar makeup for years, and that's worked for you. However, for other teams, there are metrics out there that tell you if you can't get to the line of scrimmage and break holes at an even 4.5, level 40, and you can't put too much stock into 40 times. It's a combination of what you did on the field, what your character is, but a little bit of the 40 too. But if you can't break 4.5, the metrics show you really don't make it in the NFL.
Okay, before we go to the specific teams, let's talk about the teams that overall that you felt reached big time in this draft.
Reached? We could talk about the entire first round in some cases. This draft, much like the Jake Long draft of the 4 or 5 years ago, is one where I'm on record as saying we're probably looking at 10 busts of the top 20 picks.
Wow.
Now, luckily, we're not in one of those old-time salary cap things where you had to pay $50 million and then $35 million and so on.
Well, it's about time they straightened that out, too.
Yeah, and the veterans are pleased about that.
Exactly.
But the problem is you're still... You're down one starter if you have one of those busts. So if you're looking at reaching, look at some of the teams that absolutely couldn't afford to reach. The Detroit Lions took a guy, Ansah, with pick 5 in the draft, who had 4.5 career sacks. That's not what you want. The Chicago Bears at 20 picked up great bloodlines in Kyle Long, but he had 4 offensive line starts in his career. Bartavius Mingo, if you put him sideways, the guy that Cleveland drafted, you wouldn't see him. He's that thin, and he's your pass rushing defensive end offensive linebacker, outside linebacker hybrid for the defense that you're counting on. And he's got to get a lot stronger.
Of course, the good news is Cleveland really didn't need too many people, so they can afford that, right? Ha, ha, ha.
The good news for them, let's go good news, bad news.
Okay.
If this is San Francisco, you're standing up and applauding because what you've got a draft in 2014 that if you're in the top 10, you're salivating. It's going to be incredible. So this wasn't the draft to be there. So if you're San Francisco and you're trading back for 3 extra picks, they did trade back for 1 extra pick in the 2014 draft, that's great. Cleveland did it twice. In fact, those are the only 3 trades that were made for 2014 picks, I think because GMs knew next year was going to be better. But Cleveland only made 5 picks, and instead of gaining ground in a division that was ripe for moving up, they're the ones who lost ground.
So how much did trading come into play, in your opinion, in this draft overall?
Not as much as we expected, but the good teams know how to do it.
Yep.
Baltimore traded from 62 to 56. Okay, not much of a move up, but enough of a move up to get what I think is the best pure linebacker in the draft, Arthur Brown. Too many teams passed on this guy, and Baltimore may have him for 10 or 12 years, and I expect that he's going to be an all-pro in some of those years. Atlanta had a glaring need at cornerback, and they went for it twice. The move from 30 to 22 to get Trufant with NFL bloodlines.
Right.
Tremendous move, and it didn't require much. And the team they traded with, the Rams, win-win situation. They got dropping linebacker Ogletree. They know how to deal with discipline problems. They did that with Janoris Jenkins last year. And therefore, the Rams could justify moving up for Austin and moving back for Ogletree. They got the 2 players that's going to help them. 3 examples of teams that use trades to their advantage.
Okay, let's start with the individual teams, and we'll start with the NFC West. And I think that the San Francisco 49ers are one of the deepest teams ever right now. I mean, you can't get much deeper than them, and I think they were brilliant during this draft.
San Francisco and Seattle each had 11 picks. You wouldn't think two of the three or four best teams in the league could even fit 11 players on your roster, much less have an embarrassment of riches. And San Francisco is all about hits and misses. They, on my draft board, will draft players that don't fit. At the same time, did they get value or what?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about they needed a safety. They went up to get Eric Reed. Did they have to? Not necessarily, but when you started the draft with 14 picks, you go up and get them. That's what the draft is all about for these good teams. Tank Carradine in the second round is a first rounder. What held him back was he wasn't 100% for his workouts. He has the production on the field. He fits what they need. He's going to give them a pass rushing presence. Q Patton, the wide receiver from Louisiana Tech, fourth round, 128th pick, is in my top seven. There's a group of seven receivers that I can't even decide now how to slot them and rate them. They're that close. And here's the seventh one off the board, and it goes to the 49ers, another unbelievable weapon. And then they have the luxury to get Marcus Lattimore, who is just a feel-good story and an unbelievable character guy, great individual, got a standing ovation from reporters at his pro day, and they could redshirt him for a year or two. They have Gore, they have Hunter, they've got plenty, but if Gore leaves or if that running back window ends for the 30-year-old Gore in a year or two, and then you've got Lattimore and risk-reward, absolutely a great deal.
I think when you look at teams going into the next year after a very successful season like the Niners, a lot of times it's a little bit overhyped going into that second season because the expectations are ridiculous and you think, oh, they're just going to come back and be just as good. But to me, there's no reason why this team should not be the prohibitive favorite in the NFC to get back to the Super Bowl because of what they've done.
I make them the favorite, but as long as we're on the NFC West,
yes,
the competition's a little rough there.
Oh, no question. And it might be the deepest of all the divisions right now from a depth standpoint by the rosters.
Here's what we're saying. Atlanta and New Orleans are going to be improved. And that's saying a lot for Atlanta. And New Orleans, of course, has their staff back.
Right.
Minnesota drafted well. We'll get to them. There's a lot of other situations, yet I'm projecting three NFC West teams to go to the playoffs. That's how deep it is.
Speaking of the West, Pete Carroll, we've been joking through all of his moves the last few years. He doesn't even know half the guys' names on his team because they're only around long enough to say, what was your name again? Oh, well, have a nice life. But it's changing now, and he's really building something. He's starting to, I think it's almost like a college atmosphere around there, and they are rallying around him.
People love to play for him, and what's lost in the shuffle is he's a really good coach, and he has been, and he was, even in the NFL. He just wasn't given enough time, and when he was a position coach, he was wonderful. He drafts players that I don't like at the bottom of the round. He drafts five completely unrated players who did nothing last
year. Unrated to you.
Unrated to me.
Right.
However, their performance justifies my ratings. So he's going to make more misses than anybody in the draft, and he doesn't care.
Right.
Because he's also going to have some hits. And I'll stand by my ratings, and so far they've proven out. And at the same time, he does very uncharacteristic things. You take a running back at 62, last team to enter the draft. Christian Michael, again, with baggage, but guys like Pete Carroll can handle that. On the other hand, you've got Lynch there. You drafted Turbin, who was very serviceable last year. This wasn't their number one need. And so I am disappointed with what they did. At the same time, if they straighten him out in 2 years, when this team needs him, he'll be there.
So how would you grade Seattle at this point, then?
I would grade Seattle as having a below-average draft. They didn't really hit their needs. They drafted the wrong tight end. They still need pass blockers on the offensive line. The best thing they did was in the fifth round, pick 137, Jesse Williams, a very good run-oriented defensive tackle. Little-known fact, maybe to some of your listeners, is that Seattle fell off the map in the second half of the season last year in their run defense. Over 5 yards a carry. 5.6, I believe. That's not going to make it in crunch time in a cold weather playoff game, etc., etc. Getting somebody like that fixes that.
Okay, so here you're not grading them well, but at the same time you're saying they're still one of the better teams.
Absolutely, because they handled free agency as good or better as anybody. They got two sackers. They got Percy Harvin, who could do a number of different things. They've got a lot of frontline people, and they've got to continue to stock their skilled position players, because Russell Wilson is still just a second-year guy.
Right.
And as high as everybody is on him now, the same people who weren't high on him when he was drafted, there's film on him now. And it's the toughest challenge for a quarterback is improving from year one to year two. Now, Russell Wilson has the head to do that. He is incredibly articulate in terms and diligent in the way he approaches his craft.
And the St. Louis Rams, they were totally out of any possibility of doing anything for the last few years. They had no chance. Bad offensive line, no playmakers, and now they bring in Jeff Fisher, and we talked about it as soon as they hired him. It's going to be a whole new franchise, and it's turning out that way. I thought they were fantastic in the draft.
First win St. Louis ever had was when Jeff Fisher said, "I want St. Louis instead of Miami." And this is a team that had zero clue in the draft room, in the war room. I mean, zero clue. Now, in year two of the complete makeover, they're a playoff team.
Yep.
They're an absolute playoff team. They've completely redone their wide receivers. All of their wide receivers have come to them since April of last year. And they've got a starting four wide receivers that can compete with anybody. And we're talking 13 months. They have a starting four wide receiver.
And by the way, that goes from the bottom maybe five of receivers.
Yeah.
Besides Amendola, there was never a playmaker on that team for the last several years.
And Amendola played a handful of games each
right.
of the last two seasons.
Exactly. So all of a sudden, their quarterback has somebody to throw to.
And they had nine tight ends, of which their top two tight ends are not any of those nine.
Wow.
So they've revamped that. They've completely redone cornerback, which was a terrible area for them. 65% allowed completions. They have three good cornerbacks. They still need work on safety. Jeff Fisher knows the family, so he's got T.J. McDonald in there at free safety. Not the free safety I would have picked, but he has talent, and he's not that much differently rated than the people that he could have chosen there. In the meantime, he took the entire West Virginia wide receiver core, a very, very productive core in Austin and Bailey, and he stole an offensive guard / offensive center in Barrett Jones. All he knows how to do is win, and he won awards at more than one position at Alabama.
So, and then how about the last place Arizona Cardinals, who are now the new-look Cardinals, new coach, new regime. What do you think?
I think they're in tough in their division. If I were them, I'd petition to get out of that division. But short of that, maybe there can be some restructuring. Short of that, they've got a long road ahead. However, I like their first two picks. I like Jonathan Cooper. He was my third-rated offensive lineman ahead of Lane Johnson, who went third to Philadelphia, although I appreciate the fact that athleticism for Philadelphia was a prerequisite, so it's a fit there. But Jonathan Cooper is a fit for a very, very poor 32nd-ranked offensive line. And Kevin Minter at linebacker is just a player. He's almost like, okay, who is he? That's fine. He's doing a nice job. And before you know it, he'll have 10 years in the league, and he's going to be rock solid. He's everybody's guy that people passed on because he's not flamboyant, but he can play. But they have a lot of holes. They didn't draft safety. They missed on offensive outside linebacker. And they're going to wait for quarterback to next year. Now, Carson Palmer has a strong arm, and he has a great receiver core, and that's going to be a big difference. But they have no long-term solution at quarterback.
Yeah, I think Bruce Arians is in for a tough start to his Cardinal career. How about the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons, a team that just looked so good at times last year, but we always thought there was something missing. They could never get to that elite level. What do you think they've done to get there in the draft?
What they did is they drafted two starters at cornerback. They lost two guys from last year, one of which was hurt all year, Grimes. Potentially, they have two cover corners, which is what I like the best. I'm always on teams to get cover corners as opposed to playing the soft zone and allowing completions underneath, because if you get cover corners, it prevents the come-from-ahead loss, right, as I call it. You're ahead, you're trying to protect the lead, and then you have nobody who could cover. Atlanta has had that deficiency for years with that over 60% pass D. They fixed the offense. They made it from a running team to a passing team. What they needed to do is complement that defensively, and that is what they've done. They had two things they had to do. They fixed one. They fixed cornerback. They still have to get some pass rushers. They didn't get that in this particular draft, and they kind of messed around more than anything after the first two rounds, but what they got in the first two rounds I like.
Okay, and the rest of the division, they're under 500 last year. You look at Carolina, they need a lot of bodies, but they only have five picks. So what does that do? And their first pick, everybody was raving about Lotulelei last year. And is this guy going to be a great pro or not?
That's a good question.
Thank
because
you.
That's one of the 10 out of the 20 that is boom or bust. I like the fit for this team. Dave Gettleman is a GM. Where did he come from? New York Giants. What do the New York Giants do? They build from the inside out. And that's what Carolina is doing. He says you can't win unless you have people in the trenches. So he goes D-line, D-line, one and two. Star, the Utah man.
Yes.
It's a
good name to have if you're going into the NFL. Star, right?
He fits. Kawan Short doesn't fit for me. He takes off downs, doesn't have the motor I'd like to see. He's more of a situational sacker. At that particular point, they needed to fix other things. And believe me, Carolina had more holes, especially, like you said, five picks isn't going to get it done. And in the NFC, again, as I alluded to, 15 teams have a chance to make the playoffs. What you did on draft day 2013 helps determine whether you're one of the six that actually makes it.
Now, the New Orleans Saints, and we mentioned them briefly earlier, this is sort of a make-or-break year. I mean, the transition from what happened last year to this, they need to get back to where they were before, or they could slide downhill fast, in my opinion. What do you think they did?
I'll tell you what they did that they didn't do last year. They showed up to the draft.
Although they forfeited a pick, too.
They forfeited a pick, just like last year. But what happened is they weren't animated at all last year. They let some guy from Canada be their first pick. Regina in Canada, a defensive tackle that nobody scouted. The New Orleans beat writers had a field day with the sarcasm. All of a sudden, they're animated and they cared about this draft. They took Vaccaro. They weren't going in looking for him. I think they were looking for Jarvis Jones, the outside linebacker. But they recognized their secondary had some issues, and Kenny Vaccaro was the best safety in this particular draft. They drafted a workout warrior, but a potential really good offensive tackle in the third round. And New Orleans is a kind of team that has worked with small college products and made them good offensive linemen. And at the same time, for the first time in a while, they picked a really good defensive tackle, nose tackle, by trading up in round three. And they got him, John Jenkins, out of Georgia. The entire Georgia defense was practically drafted in this particular draft, and with good reason, because they had a good defense. And this guy could plug holes in the middle. Imagine New Orleans Saints, who sometimes were good against the run and poor against the pass, or vice versa, actually having a shot to be good at both.
Okay, so do you believe, though, that they can still get back to that where they were before and be a Super Bowl contender with the guys they've acquired this year?
I think even though it's a small haul, I think, yes, they'll have better coaching. They even added Stills, who fits their scheme at wide receiver. I think they're the primary challenge to the Rams right now, as we sit right now, 4 months before we have to decide anything, as the next playoff contender, and a contender to beat out Atlanta if something falls through the cracks there for that division.
And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who are, again, they're evolving. I like that word, because they really are under, you know, second year, new coach. They're going to try and figure out what they're all about. And how do we rate their draft?
Not good. I compare it to last year when they drafted high model people,
yep,
solid citizens, and pulled the wool over the New York Giants' eyes when they drafted the running back who had a very great rookie year, Martin, moving back into the first round to get him. This was a bland draft. They drafted a slow cornerback, Jonathan Banks. He has many of the intangibles, but he's too slow. He's 4'6 something in a 4'4 league. They drafted Mike Glennon, And I understand drafting a quarterback because this is make or break for Josh Freeman. And I understand Mike Glennon to this team because he has a deep arm and this team has receivers that can go deep.
Do I hear a butt coming?
You hear it. Obviously, this does nothing for this year. So they've slid back this year, and Mike Glennon has some of the same characteristics that Josh Freeman has, interceptions. And I didn't see anything else out of the rest of the draft that tells me that these are going to be anything but special team players. So therefore, there's nothing I can endorse that tells me, other than Revis, that this team has gotten better to be competitive in a highly competitive division and anything else associated with the NFC.
So do you still make Atlanta a slight favorite to win this division, or
slight favorite? Slight favorite over New Orleans to win the division. It's close. Carolina, I still like Rivera as a coach, and if the defensive line can help mask other deficiencies, then they have a chance to threaten those, and I think Tampa took a step back.
I still wonder if Rivera is a head coach, but
I guess is the make or break year.
Absolutely. The NFC North, let's start with the Packers, who they no longer have a problem at running back, at least not from a depth standpoint, right?
My good and bad news with Green Bay is you've got a lot of picks. You don't have a lot of roster spots open. Why are you fooling around to trade back to get Eddie Lacy? Just take him at 55. Don't bother with that.
Right.
In the end result, they get him and they get Jonathan Franklin, and all of a sudden they could dump everybody else they have at running back because these are the two guys that may be the best two out of this particular draft for their needs. They couldn't use some of the other guys that were drafted ahead of them because they didn't fit what they're going to be doing. So Green Bay got better at running back. There's no question about that. They needed somebody to not turn around and look as Colin Kaepernick was running right by them as he did in the playoff game, and that's their first game. So they drafted DeTony Jones with the idea that you're going to be on the field against Colin Kaepernick week one in September, probably prime time, and you're going to stop this guy because we didn't do that last year. And then the rest of the draft...
By the way, so is DeTony Jones going to be capable of stopping Kaepernick?
DeTony Jones, in my opinion, is not your take-on guy that is going to survive if somebody runs right at him, but he has the speed and the wherewithal, and he's played under Jim Mora. He has that NFL thinking going on where he could seal the edge. And so there's more good than bad. They're not going to improve their overall run defense with him, but they are going to improve their awareness for the new NFL that some of the teams are running.
I know this Micah Hyde, the DB out of Iowa, is somebody that they were touting as a quality value pick at the time. Do you agree?
It's the kind of pick that might fit for Green Bay more than other teams. I wouldn't expect much right now. There are people who run faster. There are people who tackle better. There are people with better measurables and even better stats than a Big Ten player who saw the field a lot. However, this guy's going to see the field a lot for Green Bay over time, and the way they run their scheme, they find a way to lower the pass defense. They don't have a problem with that. This is the kind of cerebral player that fits this particular program.
Okay, it's been a few years since the Minnesota Vikings have been viable, and now it looks like maybe they're back.
They didn't expect Sharif Floyd right away. Everybody thought, including myself, that you're looking at three positions: cornerback, wide receiver, and linebacker. So naturally, their first pick is defensive tackle. But Sharif Floyd is the heir apparent to Williams. Williams is probably going to be there one more year. And in terms of replacing him, they probably couldn't find a better guy. And they knew they could go either cornerback or wide receiver next. And they go with Rhodes. And that's a really good pick for a team that also needs to lower their pass defense. And now they've got two foundations. Then they make that big trade, probably traded a little too much, 4-for-1. And everybody, all the experts said, this is Manti Te'o, this is Manti Te'o, the inside linebacker they need, and so on and so forth. And I'm a little bit glad that they didn't go that way because there were plenty of other linebackers still available, but not the knock the top off the defense wide receiver that was available. Cordell Patterson, who I thought should have gone to New England at 29, but New England traded the pick to Minnesota, goes here. And had he gone to a team other than these kinds of teams, I think he would have dropped a little bit lower in my solid 7 wide receiver. But he stays up in the top 3 or 4 because this is exactly what Minnesota needed. So 3 picks on the first round, 3 starters.
So what is it with the NFC North and UCLA? Minnesota takes back-to-back Bruins, and of course the Packers took 2 guys. There must be some connection I'm not familiar with.
I'll give you a different story.
Okay.
Ready for this? This is the 7th time in 2 years that Minnesota has taken 2 players from the same school.
Oh, really?
7th time in 2 years. You look at the board, they took 2 from Florida State. They took 2 from Penn State. They took 2 from UCLA. 4 times they did this last year.
What's that all about?
I don't know, but this is a stat that will go down in history.
Well, at least they didn't forget about making a pick this year. That's a good thing. So what do you think
overall?
Buddy
system.
Yeah, exactly. But Minnesota, they do look improved, don't they?
They stay in the mix, but none of this really matters much because their 2013 key is Christian Ponder.
Yeah.
It's basically, can he throw deep? He wasn't asked to last year. And can he improve? Because they can't take the next step if Christian Ponder is a short-arm quarterback.
Well, at least Christian Ponder made a nice draft pick and his wife.
Very nice.
He did a very good job there. And how about the Chicago Bears, who, to me, look like they're going backwards?
The Bears have ask your listeners to look up the last 10.
No, you ask them.
Okay, I will ask them. Look up the last 10 first-round draft picks that Chicago has, and then start laughing or shaking your head if you're a Chicago Bear fan. It just hasn't worked out. They again draft for potential here with Kyle Long, who has enormous athletic ability and, like we said, 4 starts. So they're asking for a lot. Now, the Bears may have gone a little bit backwards in terms of their coaching staff is new, and it's going to be more of an offensive-minded coaching staff, and they got old with linebacker in a hurry, and they manufactured a lot of points last year because of an incredible takeaway rate, and we can't expect that again this year, so they're not going to create the same number of points. That means you automatically go backwards, so you have to draft well. The Bears, I thought, did a better job of not reaching later in the draft. They actually drafted players that fit in the NFL.
And, of course, their O-line was brutal. Did they get the right fit for what they're going to need?
Mills and Long, we don't know, but they did address this about 7 times if you count free agency. It's a whole new-look offensive line, and they're going to have to hope that some of the draft choices that they've had recently, including a first-round draft choice, plays better because he was drafted as a first-round draft choice to be a 10-year cornerstone, the guy from Wisconsin. I think it's going to be better, and I think their head coach is somewhat of an innovator offensively, and if the Bears buy into that, they can improve. But like we've been talking about, it's not going to be easy because every week is going to bring another good team.
So we know how difficult it is to get Jay Cutler to smile. Is he smiling yet?
I think a lot of things he says on the sidelines, if you mic him up, they're going to make for good comedy, and he's a good guy, but he wears his emotions on his sleeve.
But is he smiling because his team is better yet?
He's going to leave that to management. However, the first time he gets knocked down, he's going to say, well, why couldn't we get somebody a little bit better?
And finally, the Detroit Lions. Tell everybody your thoughts on how they've handled the draft the last at least decade, if not more.
Every year I ask them to draft cornerbacks. Every year I ask them to draft good cornerbacks. Every year I increase the number of cornerbacks I ask them to draft.
And every year they disappoint you.
Every year they disappoint me. So they go ahead and draft Ziggy Ansah, who basically had 4.5 career sacks and basically played 1 year as a starter. Didn't start the whole year, by the way, at BYU, which didn't have a stellar schedule last year. And they're asking him to be the cornerstone of a defense that if they don't get to the quarterback, they have nobody at cornerback. Darius Slay, I'm going to quote one of the beat writers.
Okay.
Indifferent tackler.
that's not exactly a high rating.
He went on and said marginal experience.
Oh, well, that helps.
probably, even in post-draft, probably not going to make my top 10 or barely make my top 10 cornerbacks. This doesn't make them better. Yet they had all the... I've got to tell you, this is a team I'm the most disappointed of in the entire draft, because you're looking at a bunch of reaches, one of the bottom five drafts, and you're looking at a team that had three characteristics that automatically move them up. So let me explain. They had minus 16 in turnover ratio. Turnover ratio equates to 3.5 points. That means if they had a zero turnover ratio, and Stafford can be pretty careful with the ball at times, you're talking about 56 points made up automatically. Their overall point differential was better than what their record indicated. That moves them up. Third thing, schedule. They play a fourth place schedule. You're talking about a team that if they stayed even on draft day would improve a minimum of 4 games. A minimum of 4 games, because this is a time-tested theory. And then they go backwards.
So they had 9 picks. You say, please bring in some more DBs. And one of them was a DB.
One of them was a DB. But good thing they got a punter in round 5. That really helps me. That's a panic move, because a punter went the pick before them. So they said, we better get a punter. If you ask me what their best pick was, can I be sarcastic again? Brandon Hepburn has already worked on a program, biochemistry, where he has developed something that has worked in terms of maybe curing cancer for rats.
Perfect.
This guy might be one of the best person team fits in his career after football.
Excellent. I think Audrey Hepburn might have been a better pick. What do you think?
It doesn't bode well for their on-field performance, at least this draft.
So obviously the Packers are the prohibitive favorites going into next season, but Minnie is coming up.
They're coming up. Minnie is definitely going to challenge for a playoff spot. What the Packers have to worry about more than a division is where they stand in relation to what we talked about with the NFC West and what we talked about with Atlanta and New Orleans. The Packers might be in line not for a playoff bye this particular year, and that's what killed them last year. They didn't get their rest, and you could see it in their game against San Francisco.
Okay, in the NFC East, the Washington Redskins, they're defending champions of the division. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think you can put a blanket around the NFC East or draw numbers out of a hat, because that's the way it is every year. Washington entered late. They paid a lot for RG3. Interesting fact about Washington's draft, they drafted 3 defensive backs, which was their primary area of need. They drafted these 3 guys who were either first or second in the last 2 years in interceptions in the entire NCAA. They went for guys who could absolutely and positively take away the ball. That's the good news. The bad news is, if you're hungry, we can feed you a little bit of toast, because just like Hall, who they have on their roster right now, Emerson got burned repeatedly last year, and he admitted to it. He stood up for it. He went for the interception. He got burned repeatedly at North Carolina State. And this is not the and because they run a very aggressive defense under their coordinator, too aggressive, it makes them susceptible to the big play, and this could happen again.
So how do you rate the Redskins draft?
Pretty average, but they were, again, hamstrung because they entered late.
Right.
But I thought they could have gotten better players. They're going to be rated players, which means they made their draft board, but I would have done things a little bit different for sure. They didn't get inside linebacker. They drafted 2 running backs, and Mike Shanahan is a genius when it comes to running backs. We know that. But was running back really a need for them when they had other needs? Why didn't they draft another wide receiver? Garcon wasn't healthy enough last year, yep. And they're only complementary parts. So they basically, I think, they misjudged what their positional needs were, and they handled only one.
New York football Giants, I think they're in a little bit of transition right now. Yeah, losing some key guys the last couple of years. They're obviously not the same team that won the Super Bowl a few years ago, so... Where are they going right now?
If you listen to the post comments of Tom Coughlin, they made some misses. He basically said out loud, it just didn't work out for us getting better at linebacker and for us it just didn't work out for us getting better at cornerback.
Now, are you talking about they made misses that they're not happy with their picks, or they blew their chances to get what they wanted?
They blew their chances to get what they wanted. They basically ignored the position because the players that were left on the board when they made the decisions that they did weren't of the New York Giant quality that they really wanted.
Best players available as opposed to need in that case?
They always go best player available, although you could argue that they strayed from that in round one with Justin Pugh, who is a pure New York Giant. I mean, this guy is a great guy, and he fits perfectly with the chemistry of what they have. They need an offensive lineman for the present and the future. A little bit of a reach at that pick, but they knew the way the offensive linemen were coming off Fast and Furious. I'm not going to knock that pick, but I am going to say that they missed fired on some cover cornerbacks that came off and certainly at pick 49, and they could have moved up for linebackers or cornerbacks after that. So I thought they had their chances for the fifth year in a row to draft linebacker, and you're right. They're in a little bit of transition. They're very vulnerable. They're well-coached, and they understand line play, and they could easily win this division because it is winnable. But you know, they're missing pieces.
It's not exactly the Ryan Nassib era, I wouldn't call it, though, right?
No. But you want to talk about quarterbacks. Nassib is a blue-collar kind of guy. He doesn't have the arm strength that I like. Super smart guy. Fits the New York Giants. I'm going to go on record right now off the team and tell you that I think the three quarterbacks drafted in round four will outperform the quarterbacks drafted in round one, two, and three. It's that kind of a year. But for the Giants, they hope this guy never sees the field.
Well, of course.
Because they've got Eli Manning.
Right.
And when you trade up to get a guy who you hope never sees the field, I have some problems with that.
Is Nassib sort of like a newer version of Phil Sims? You know, not a great arm, but you know, a cerebral guy, makes good decisions, blah, blah, blah.
If he has anywhere close to the kind of career...
And I'm not talking about as a broadcaster either.
He may have potential as that. Syracuse guys are on board of directors. Donovan McNabb is on their board of directors. And these guys are very cerebral guys, and they get drafted because of their smarts. On the other hand, no, I don't think he's as good as Sims. And I don't think right now he sees the field as well. But I will say this about Nassib. When he gets in the zone, when he feels it, I don't think any quarterback in this draft in short area bursts did as well when he feels it. And I saw him really connect the dots on certain drives when he got in a groove.
How about the Dallas Cowboys? Really the only NFL team that doesn't have a GM.
Well, he said he'd fire the GM.
Which means nobody owns the team then. Jerry Jones, of course.
We've got a big problem here because they drafted four third rounders. Unfortunately, two of them were in the first round and the second round. People are a lot more excited about what they did in the third round, and they're better picks than what they did in the first round. And for the 19th time, he traded his first round pick. Now, I understand the run on OL. I understand the run there, and the right player wasn't available. And I understand that Travis Frederick fills a need because they need three offensive linemen. But Travis Frederick was a guy you could have got somewhere between 60 and 90. Let's be honest about that. Some people will now tell you he's a late second, and 60 is late second. So they made a mistake in terms of draft value. Then they make a mistake in terms of draft value at tight end, because last I heard they have one of the top five tight ends and a future Hall of Famer
Your
at tight end.
Your second pick with
second,
their needs?
Yes, that was a big problem. And Escobar, he could be a starter in the NFL down the road. That's not what you need. That's not what Dallas needs.
And that's not what a second pick should be at this stage. Exactly. Yeah. They have too many needs.
Yeah. And I even question, in part, their pick at 74 of Terrence Williams. Not because he's not a future starter and he'll take over for Austin. And he has deep speed, and I think he's underrated. And he's not in my top seven, but he's in that 8 to 11 range. He's clearly one of the next four guys. And I like the pick. But for Dallas, wide receiver, again, isn't their most immediate need. So with rounds two and three, they did not address immediate needs, even though Williams, all three of these guys could be starters in 3 years.
They're stuck in 500 mode the last several years. Yeah. Are they any better?
Okay, here we go. Jerry Jones said, we're not an 8-8 team anymore, and I agree. I see them six and ten or seven and nine. You're right, Jerry. You don't have an 8-8 team, and you're going to have most likely a new coach next year, and we're going to start over.
The question is, when do they have a new GM? And finally, the Philadelphia Eagles. This is really fascinating. I mean, what is Chip Kelly going to be all about?
You want the short answer?
Yeah.
No one knows.
Exactly. I bet he doesn't even know.
It's intrigue that the NFL hasn't seen in a while. You have to go back to Steve Spurrier and say, what's Steve Spurrier going to bring? And Steve Spurrier left.
By the way, Chip Kelly is saying, please don't bring up to Steve Spurrier and compare that to me, because he's in trouble if that's the case.
I don't think Chip Kelly has as good a golf game as Steve Spurrier.
He doesn't work on his game as hard as Steve Spurrier. Nobody does.
And I think Chip Kelly brings such intrigue because it might work in the NFL, because at first he turned down the job, and at second he turned down the job, and at third he turned down the job, and at fourth he said, you know something? The NFL is changing. It's time for me to go. And, of course, the money was pretty good. I don't know if it's going to work. It has a chance to work. We may be sitting here again in a year and saying, 5-11 Philly, now they need to go meat and potatoes. Or we may be saying, the timing was ripe to take advantage of what this division looks like, all 9-7s, and really only one team can go from this division to the playoffs. And why can't it be Chip Kelly?
So how do you rate what they did in the draft?
What they did is stay true to what Chip Kelly is all about. He took Lane Johnson because he's the most athletic offensive lineman. He took Zach Ertz because he's the most athletic and a game changer at tight end because he creates mismatches. He took Benny Logan because he offers scheme versatility.
He didn't take Matt Barkley because he's the most athletic quarterback.
And you put it, and your point right there.
Just saying.
Couldn't be better timed. But what he liked about Matt Barkley, and I don't know where exactly how he fits in here, but what he liked about Matt Barkley is he's a quick trigger on decisions. He can make a quick decision. And in Chip Kelly's offense, he may not have the legs and the athleticism that his Oregon quarterbacks had, but when he makes a decision, he makes it fast, and he's one of the few quarterbacks who could come in and he could go to a second read and he can go to a third read. Manuel can't do that. He wasn't trained to do that. Geno Smith can't really do that. He was trained first read, second read, throw, and that's it. It was a very timing, innovative offense at West Virginia. Barkley can do it.
Okay, the question is, what can he do in the NFL? Is he NFL caliber? I've been around him enough the last few years, as you know. I still think, maybe I've been around him too much, but I think that he has maybe the best of the leadership qualities of all the quarterbacks in this draft. How much does that come into play?
It does come into play a lot.
Especially for Chip Kelly, I think.
If you have a strong enough arm, and if you have the build of quarterback, which Barkley has. In all my years of evaluating the draft, which I'm embarrassed to say is 35.
I'm exhausted thinking about it.
I've been pretty much right on at quarterbacks, and this year... This year I'm going to say, I don't know who's the best quarterback. We haven't gotten to the team who I think might be the best quarterback, and it might shock you and the listeners. And I don't know who's the worst of the six. And Barkley fits in there. He may not make it, and he may make it. I don't think these are wow quarterbacks, but if everything else works for Chip Kelly, then Barkley will work for Chip Kelly because he'll fit in, because he can get the ball to Ertz. He can get the ball off because he's got an athletic offensive tackle, probably a left tackle blocking for him, and they've got a lot of skilled position players right now with McCoy and Jackson and McElwain.
So a quick thought on the NFC East. Are the Skins where they were last year? Obviously, we don't know about RG3 and his knees, but...
Throw a blanket around them except for Dallas. I just don't see Dallas having the coaching or the right draft to win fourth quarter. The other three, if you told me any of them were going to win, I would say yes. Give a slight edge to the New York Giants because we don't quite know if RG3 is 100%. And Philly, first, third, fourth. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert with the NFC East.
By the way, Tony Romo's on line two for you. He'd like to speak.
Does he have any money? I need a loan.
Yeah, lots of money. We'll be back with the AFC.